Oh,
yeah.
It gets you going. Now, I have to be careful because I've got my headphones on. I don't want them to fall off my head because there's not a lot to hold them on, you see.
No, no, you have to get some of Louise's super glue.
Yeah, super glue. Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Well, but then you'd have a problem about getting them off then, wouldn't you? So
I'd have to get the special police ungluing squad to come and do it, wouldn't I?
Yeah, it gets you going, that tune, doesn't it?
It kind of does. It is rocky. It's good, you know. Yeah, it gets people in the mood for the show.
We do get a copyright claim all the time for that particular piece of music, but we actually bought it. Sky has bought it. It's just that we get a code, so you've got to show them. So I'm not quite sure how it's done, but I know that we get a copyright claim, which we had on our last show, Ronnie, as you know. And so
yes,
we seem to have got a copyright claim and also a copyright strike. And so they said that because of we were showing something from BBC Studios, that was a copyright claim. So they would monetize it and also look at the analytics.
What does that mean?
But then they blocked it, which is what they don't normally do. And so I've had to appeal.
I don't understand what they mean by monetize. Try and get money out.
No, it means that if you're a monetized channel, which I'm not, and neither is Vegan, of course, as yet, it means that they take the money instead of
you.
Channel. So they can monetize what you've put out because it's their material. So
you think they'd have enough money, wouldn't you, really?
Well, the BBC, yeah, you would think that yeah. really, but yeah, well,
there we are.
You know what it's like keeping these corporations going, don't you?
Well, absolutely, yes. Yes, I know. Anyway, so we need to get on with the show, Roger, today.
Yeah, I guess we would, yeah. So I just thought, yeah, we'll let you know about if we get that back. So we've got Deb in the house. Hello, Deb. We've got Jean, and we've got Deb, and we've got we've got those two. Now, what we've got at the bottom of the screen, people, if you're tuning in on Facebook and if you're tuning in on Twitter and you want to take part in the main chat, then the easiest thing to do is switch to YouTube and go to Vegan, of course, and that's where you'll see the same thing. It just means that you'll be able to type in the thing, and it brings everybody together in that sense. So, Ronnie, radicals and militants. So this is an issue that you've been cogitating. Is that, that's a good word, isn't it? Cogitating for quite a while.
And, I think that's the word, Roger.
Yeah. So it's not do you want us to kick us off on this subject? Is that Misty again?
It's Misty. The film. She must be the film star. So you'll have to do a show just with Misty, because she's very militant, Misty. Because she's a member of the Meow Jihadeen, Misty is.
Oh, no, no.
Yeah,
no.
There we are. Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Anyway,
what do you think? Do you reckon I should remove Ronnie from that one?
I'll give people a few minutes to recover.
Let's try. Oh, yeah, that's much better. That is, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, a bit of censorship there, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, yeah. I'll try not to think of any more puns involving cats.
All right, yeah.
yeah. Radical and militant. Yeah, people often kind of think they mean the same thing, and that they use one when they should really be using the other. And I think it's important to distinguish between them. And I also think it's important to distinguish between them in relation to the animal rights movements. And you know, the actions that have been carried out over the years, and how those have been referred to, and you know, what's the most important thing to be? Is it more important to be radical, or is it more important to be militant? So that's the kind of thing, and I think it's you know, it this could turn into a very.
So what's your version of the difference between the two, then, Ronnie?
Well, radical comes from the Latin word radix, which means root. It means root, something that deals with, you know, with the root of things, you know, the fundamental, you know, with kind of fundamental values and fundamental ideas. And it's really it's really a sort of philosophical term. It's to do with the to do with the, you know, to do with the philosophy, where you want, you want, if you're a radical, you're someone who wants, who wants very, very fundamental change. So you could say that veganism is a radical philosophy. We want, you know, as vegans, we want a radical change to a world where animals are no longer, other animals are no longer oppressed by humans, and where really where all oppression ends. You know, that, you know, so veganism is a radical philosophy. Now, militant is a description of a style of action, and it means that it's a type of action that's confrontational. That can sometimes be described as violent. That it aims to, and sometimes, like, and an example of that, for instance, is like the Animal Liberation Front was a militant organisation. Well, it's still a militant organisation involving, you know, damaging property, breaking into places. You know, the recent tactics of animal rebellion could be described as militant, where they've, you know, blocked the entrances to dairies and stuff like that. Militant is a description of kind of tactics, and militant tactics aren't always used in support of radical philosophy or radical aims. And I think, you know, this is. It's interesting because, I mean, I think it's always vital to be radical in our philosophy. And
yeah, so the reason is this is important to you is because you almost like, well, we're suggesting, I suppose, both of us really, that the movement has kind of historically made a bit of a mistake by turning to militancy within, say, single issues, rather than thinking radical. And that would then bring in what you just said about veganism, and so
yes,
feeds into this weirdness in the movement that we took on veganism late in our development, and I suppose militancy, it doesn't kind of explain it, but it's almost like people said, okay, well, what's going on? And then apply militancy to that rather than thinking about it in a radical way. That's what you're saying, really, isn't it?
If we look at the history of the movement, and we can kind of go through this in historical terms, like prior to the 1960s / 1970s, you had we had an animal protection movement, well, certainly in the UK, and I think throughout the rest of the world as well, that was neither militant nor radical. In other words, you had organisations that were really kind of campaigning on single issues. Now, they may have been radical within those single issues, like an organisation, for instance, like British Union for Abolition of Vivisection, which kind of been going for a long time before the 1970s. They wanted a total end to all animal experiments. So that's kind of radical in terms of animal experiments. But it's kind of not radical in terms of the whole idea of the oppression of other animals by humans, because it only deals with one aspect of it, you see. Mm. Whereas, say, veganism deals with everything. It's total opposition.
Or planetary survival either. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting you bring up BYV, because, of course, the BYV was founded by Cobb, an Irish, semi-Irish woman. But anyway, she founded it because she found the NAVs was too moderate, and so the BYV was started as an abolitionist thing, but it kept within the confines, as you said, of vivisection. Then it moderated, and then in the beginning of the 80s, it was radicalized. And now it's moderated again.
It kind of depends on whether or not an organisation like that, say an organisation that campaigns solely against animal experiments, right? It can be radical within a sort of confined area in terms of, like, you know, the radical position with regard to experiments on other animals is to be opposed to all of them and want to end all abolition. That's the radical position, right?
Yeah.
But there's a deeper radical position than that, and that's opposition to oppression of all animals, and that radical position is veganism. And so the problem is you get organizations that are radical kind of within their own box. Like you take hunt saboteurs opposed to all forms of hunting. So in terms of hunting, they're kind of radical, but in terms of the overall area of repression of other animals, they're not, because they're confined to a single issue within that. You see, so there can be different levels of radicalism. And then you get organizations that kind of aren't radical at all. Say, for instance, here in the UK, Compassion World Farming, you know, they're not opposed to the farming of other animals. They just want kind of...
they want to take it back to extensive...
better conditions and the interlife. Yeah. Well, that's not a radical position. It's a welfare. Mm. Welfarist position is not a radical position. The only radical position would be an abolitionist one. So you kind of, you know, that was the situation kind of leading up to maybe the 60s. And then you get where there was no militancy. There was kind of what you might call confined radicalism. The only organization really leading up to the 70s that was truly radical, was certainly here in the UK, was the Vegan Society, you know, with their opposition to all the exploitation and oppression of animals. But the Vegan Society wasn't militant. The Vegan Society didn't go out damaging stuff and shouting and stuff like that. So they were truly radical, but they weren't militant. And then what happened in the 1960s, there's a rise here in England of the hunt saboteurs, you see. And so they were militant, and they actually went out and disrupted hunts. So they're a militant organization, but if they were radical, it was only in within the confines of opposition to blood sports. They weren't radical radical at the deeper level of being opposed to all oppression of other animals. And of course, you know, there were a lot of people in those days that got involved in the hunt saboteurs who weren't vegan. A lot did eventually go vegan by rubbing shoulders with other vegans that were involved. But they're kind of the stated aims of the hunt saboteurs associated aren't truly radical, because it's only opposition to one area of the oppression of other animals by humans.
Now, I want to ask you a question based on what you said already. Going back to the BYV and Frances Power Cobb, who founded it. Now, she was also a feminist and probably anti-slavery kind of campaigner. So you could say that there was elements of radicalism about her, which was lacking in the NAVs, and that might explain why she split from them. But what about... And this is the weird bit, really. What about the people who started a group like the RSPCA, or it was the royal thing? Because they also started the NSPCC, and they were also involved with the anti-slave thing. So they kind of thought radically, but they didn't apply militancy to it. Although, again, you had the youth thing as well with the which is why you took the name Band of Mercy, right? So. It's a weird thing that you could actually have, in terms of radicalism versus militancy, the actual animal welfarists of the 19th century were quite radical in that sense, because they...
Yeah, well, also militant in terms of, the Band of Mercy youth group carried out direct action to some extent. But like, were they radical in terms of other animals, you know, because the only radical position to have in relation to other animals is to be totally opposed to the all oppression of other animals by humans. And I don't think the RSPCA had that position even right at the beginning.
No, that's what I mean. So that's really, really weird, isn't it? The way that they could be kind of radical in one sense, because they saw interconnections and all that kind of stuff. And yet their own position in terms of their focus wasn't very kind of radical, which is quite interesting. I just want to just to back up and kind of nail this down, really, what you were saying about the distinction between the two. So I've got my trusty thesaurus here, and so this is interesting. You like the end of this? Wait for this for me. It says radical. So fundamental, basic, rudimentary, elementary, elemental, constitutional, complete, total, entire, absolute. Then you've got the more kind of pejorative things in terms of extremist, extreme, immoderate, revolutionary, rebel, rebellious. And then it's interesting because it says militant as well. So they're using the things interchangeable. Mm. And then it says fanatic. Then it says leftist. Then it says left wing. Now, the opposite of it in this book, you like this, it says superficial and conservative.
So which always goes together, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, I thought you'd like that.
Yeah.
But before you say anything, if you go then to militant,
yeah,
then you've got aggressive, assertive, vigorous, active, fighting, warring, combative, contentious, conflict, clashing, this kind of stuff. Mm. And so it's kind of really backing up what you are saying there, that there's a distinct meaning between the two terms, right?
Yes, yeah, and they're kind of and they're often used wrongly. I mean, one thing that really irks me is you hear this term radical Islamists, don't you? Well, yeah. They're not radical. How is a religion like that, or indeed any other religion, in any way radical? You know, they're extremely reactionary.
It's a radical thing to say, though, Ronnie.
Views are like extremely reactionary. What they wanted, yeah. You know, the treatment of women and all the other things, and you know, belief in hocus pocus. Basically, that isn't.
It's radical. Like saying radical Catholic or something, isn't it?
Yeah, and they're not radical. So it angers me that they see radical Islamists. They're not radical. You know that, you know, so and that's a wrongful use of that of that term, and it can be applied to like lots of other things. Like, I'm sure there have been people that radical Catholics and radical Christians in the USA and all that, but these people are they're extremely reactionary. They aren't radical.
Now there's something in this book that you I think you might have a few problems with. So this is the famous terrorists of freedom fighters. So Nocella and Steve Best, and Patrice Jones writes in this. She makes an interesting parallel between what was going on with the radical feminists and what was going on with the ALF or other forms of kind of animal direct action, if you like. And so she's basically saying that over time, there's a kind of shift where something that was seen as radical and then opposed because of its militancy becomes adopted years later by the moderate. And so this is how things kind of shift. You know, I mean, people have talked about things like Malcolm X and Martin Luther King and everything. So the things that shocked people, even the difference between suffragettes and suffragists, you know, the suffragists were critical of the suffragettes. And now everybody thinks that what the suffragettes did, although a lot of it was incredibly militant, was okay, you know. So it's almost like the passage of time.
You see, in terms of radical, what you have to look at, you don't look at the actions at all. Radical isn't to do with the form of action. Radical is to do with the philosophy. So if you want to look at the, you know, if you're looking at whether or not the suffragettes were radical, you don't look at their actions, you look at their philosophy. If you see what I mean, and you know, with the ALF, if you're going to look at the ALF and to decide whether or not the ALF was radical, you don't look at the actions, you look at the philosophy. What was the philosophy that lay behind the actions? You see, and it's kind of quite complicated with the ALF, really, because because the vast majority of people who carried out ALF actions were radical in their views regarding the treatment of other animals by humans. You know, the people involved who are still involved were, you know, for a very large part vegans. I mean, you know, it was acceptable back in the day for vegetarians to be involved because it was kind of, because there were kind of so few vegans around. But, you know, we did have this kind of unwritten rule that, you know, we wanted people to be at least vegetarian who took part in actions that we wanted them to have made personal change.
You couldn't control that, though.
You couldn't control it. No, but that was, you couldn't control, you know, all of the kind of what was said to be the kind of principles of the ALF weren't things we could control. But it was it was what somebody would have to abide by in order to be able to describe what they did as an ALF action.
There's a parallel there with veganism, really, isn't it? Because we all kind of
But you see, so you had kind of people, and this kind of goes back to kind of what happened in the 1970s, you know, with the animal rights movement, the animal liberation movement. You know, the 1970s was when the term speciesism was coined. Speciesism, meaning like, you know, prejudice by humans against other animals, you know, the oppression of other animals by humans, you know, simply because they're different, you know, something akin to racism and sexism, homophobia and all that, you know, it's along the same line of those things, was this prejudice, you know, prejudice against others because they're different. That term, you know, was coined in the 1970s by Richard Rider, and it really means the same as human supremacism. It's opposition to, you know, this supremacist viewpoint that that humans tend to have in relation to other animals, and lots of people began to take that on board in the 70s. You know, lots of people kind of became anti-speciesists, became opposed to human supremacism. But what happened was the actions they took and the campaigns they carried out kind of weren't in line with that. They didn't campaign on that fundamental level, because campaigning on that fundamental level would have been campaigning for veganism. But we didn't do that. I was among people that didn't do that. We campaigned on single issues, and in our campaigning on single issues, we became militant. So we were militant without being radical. In other words, you know, our direct action was aimed at animal experimentation, was aimed at the fur trade. There was some direct action, maybe against the meat industry. You know, there were, you know, vehicles destroyed at slaughterhouses and stuff like that. But it wasn't a campaign for veganism. It wasn't a campaign saying, you know, we want humans to go vegan. We want humans to adopt vegan principles. It didn't do that. And so it wasn't a radical campaign. It was a militant campaign, but it wasn't truly radical. So where people describe the ALF as radical, it's not really correct.
Yeah, I understand that. You know, so in that sense, Patrice kind of gets that wrong. I mean, do you think it's, in general sense, thinking about the movement in general, and also thinking about the fact that people started to form groups and that meant wages and this kind of stuff, they were wary of veganism, and it was because of what you've just said. There wasn't that many of them about. And so it's a question some people might say, well, you can't wait around for a big growth in vegans until you start campaigning, which is an interesting proposition in a way, that if the movement had focused on veganism as a moral baseline, you know, 30 years before it actually did, it makes you wonder what shape the movement would be in a sense, because you would have still then seen a, presumably, this is me speculating, obviously, a growth of veganism at the same time when the entry of the people who were more likely to be militant and take direct action at the same time. So you might have got past the problem that we've now got a lot of vegans who are not active.
Mm. Yes.
You know, so you see what I mean? I mean, I know, and I didn't put that very well, but getting at, in the sense that if veganism was much more central back then, the two things might have grown together.
I think they would. I think it kind of goes back to, see, what happened was, although people individually had a radical philosophy, people individually were like opposed to speciesism, opposed to human supremacism, and individually became vegan. What happened was the movement mimicked what had existed prior to that. In other words, it took the campaign, it took existing campaigns and turned them militant. You know, like the existing campaign against animal experiments, say, that being kind of waged, I suppose, if that's the kind of right word, being run by the BUAB, by the National Anti-Vivisection Society, you know, here in the UK prior to the 1970s. Once we got into the 70s and the dawn of the Band of Mercy and then the ALF, Those campaigns, the people campaigning for that for those things, or some of the people campaigning for those things, became militants. You know, they were demanding the same as those organizations, but the tactics were militant, if you see what I mean. And so what happened, there was this, there were campaigns against the fur trade leading up to the 1970s. And then what happened was that some people said, right, we're going to carry on those campaigns, but we're going to do so in a militant fashion. And so what happened was that all those campaigns that kind of led up to the 70s were kind of mimicked by people who wanted to become militant in support of the demands of those campaigns. And I think that possibly because the vegan society wasn't kind of outwardly a campaigning organization in the same ways as those other organizations were, nobody dealt with veganism in the same way. Nobody said, right, we're going to kind of take veganism and we're going to kind of run a militant campaign for veganism. Or even a campaign that kind of took veganism to the streets. Nobody did that. And I'm wondering if it's because the vegan society was more of a, the vegan society did, people that ran the vegan society did go out and give talks and try to smudge the message that way. But it kind of wasn't grassroots. It wasn't like street stalls, and it wasn't kind of stuff like Animal Rebellion are kind of doing today and stuff like that,
anything like that, was it?
Yeah, and, no.
I mean,
no.
I always say that, I mean, my own perception of it, which is really kind of odd now, is that groups like Compassion in Wool Farming, you've mentioned already, they were part of the animal movement and seen so, the same as, say, the League Against Cruel Sports, you know, so you had a lot of militants and moderates all kind of lumped in, you know, the League, yeah. the HSA, you had Compassion in Wool Farming, a bit more militant, but not much. Probably be things like Chickens Lib and, you know, those other kind of groups based on farmed other animals. But the vegan society wasn't even seen as part of the movement back then, I don't think.
It kind of wasn't, because it kind of wasn't seen as a kind of campaigning group. And I think that's kind of why. I mean, going back to the League, you know, the League is another example of an organisation that's not even, or certainly wasn't then, and probably still isn't, radical in terms of its fundamental philosophy, because the League wasn't opposed to all cruel sports. The League wasn't opposed to horse racing. It wasn't opposed to greyhound racing.
And the big one, fishing.
And it wasn't opposed to fishing.
Yeah.
So League Against Cruel Sports, there's a joke in it, League Against some cruel sports, you know.
Well, actually, I remember a time we were doing a TV thing in Liverpool. It's quite funny, really, because I got a funny anecdote, but we'll probably leave that for another time. But Fiona Hughes was the spokesperson for the Hunt Saboteurs that day. And the guy in charge of the League at the time was Richard Corse, Dick Corse, that you'll know. Ronnie,
Fiona
had a fishing as a blood sports badge on, and Dick Corse tried to get her to take it off, right?
Yeah,
and so Fiona came over to a few people and kind of, you know, what should I do? And we said, well, look, the HSA position is to oppose fishing, and so if the league isn't in that situation, get the League to explain that. Not that you're going to take yours off, you know. And if the journalist says, oh, so you're opposed to fishing, and then Fiona says yes, and then they turn to Dick Corse and said, but you're not right. Well, it's for them to explain the difference.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course, Dick Corse eventually, you know, was a turncoat and went over to the side of the Hunt, didn't he? Because he, for some reason, he got the sack from the League, and he took it out on them by kind of supporting the other side.
And Jim Barrington too. I mean, he joined
history within the League of people becoming turncoats, which is absolutely appalling. And one day, of course, the ones that survive will be brought to trial when we run the show.
it did work the other way around, in the sense that there was this guy called, I think he was called Churchill, funny enough.
Yes,
I think,
A Master of the Hound Speaks. He wrote, there was a guy being Master of the Hunt. And he wrote...
He went the other way.
People have gone the other way. You know, there's some people in Hunt Sabs, some really, really excellent people in Hunt Sabs, that used to go hunting and then saw, you know, how terrible it was. They were probably brought up that way. And then, you know, when they realised, and, you know, join the Hunt Sabs. So it does happen the other way. It probably happens the other way more than the bad way, But it's still not good when people go over the other side.
We remember all the ones that went over back.
Well, yeah, we remember them. Well,
I mean, there was a couple of stabs that I know went started going hunting.
I knew some as well. You know, so it seems to be something to do with hunting that. Where
well,
that
again, you see, the thing is, though, I mean, that just comes back to proving the point in a way. If veganism as a principle was much stronger then, that would have presumably made that look much less likely, right?
Yeah, it would have done, and I think this is kind of a fundamental error we made back in the day that there was no campaigning for veganism. You see, because what's kind of happened with the progress of veganism, it kind of all through the years. You know, when you look at when vegan outreach kind of properly really began, which is probably about 25 years ago, you know, the rise in the number of vegans was slow at first, and then the kind of curve starts getting steeper as more people become vegan, more other people become vegan,
the real bell curve,
and so it goes on. Well, if we'd started that progress way back in the 70s, yes, progress would have been slow at first. You know, we'd have only kind of, you know, changed people here and there, wouldn't we? But that build up would have happened happened kind of 25 years earlier, and so where we would be now would be far, far further on. And I think it's a tragedy that didn't happen. I think there's reasons why it didn't, you know, and I've kind of partly explained some of those. But I still think it's a tragedy that didn't happen, you know, way back in the day, because I think we'd have been much closer to achieving animal liberation now if it had.
Yeah, but again, you see, I mean, from my perspective, I mean, and you know what I'm going to say, is that the elephant in the room here is the fact that the national groups didn't want a big push towards veganism because they thought it would reduce their membership, and that therefore meant their income, right?
Yes, you would have been up against that, but that wouldn't have kind of stopped it from operating at a grassroots level, because what happened in tandem with the kind of militancy,
the grassroots were kind of in service of the national groups, weren't they, at the time?
I mean to a considerable extent. I mean, there were independent you know, local animal rights groups at the time, and this is one thing that kind of did start around about that time into the 70s and 80s. People would form local animal rights groups, and they'd do stalls on the streets, but those stalls on the streets weren't kind of vegan outreach stalls. They were anti-vivisection stalls or stalls against the fur trade and stuff like that, you see. Whereas if vegan education had been taken to the grassroots like that, and people had had you know, stalls on the street and other kind of education and events where they'd kind of given out vegan literature, maybe from the Vegan Society or their own that they'd produced, and you know, made some food samples from, you know, what we could make in the day, then all that could have been done at grassroots levels, despite, you know, what the nationals might have said.
Obviously I'm going to agree with that, but I mean, I still see pictures on Facebook right now where the only thing that they seem to have on their desk are national group leaflets. And so, I mean, it was the same for us, because we were one of the groups that had a stall in Liverpool, and we got all our leaflets from Animal Aid, BYV, NAVS. We had league ones, we had unsubordinated, all together, all kind of laid out.
Yes. I think the difference now is that you can get leaflets now from national groups that actually promote veganism, you know, from Viva, Animal Aid and the Vegan Society.
Yeah, but back then they didn't. And so therefore you had all these vegans kind of almost like putting out as a whole series of single issue non-vegan stuff.
Yeah, that's what happened. But you see, what could have happened, and it would be better had it happened back in the day, if the Vegan Society had produced leaflets and said, we want to encourage, you know, this localized grassroots activism, we're going to produce leaflets for people to kind of have on street stalls, you know, from the Vegan Society. Or people could have produced their own, of course, because you didn't
but
have
then again, you see, then you had technology then. I mean, like, it's interesting. I mean, we can throw words out like produce your own now because you can think of the internet and how simple it is.
It was more difficult.
And even people have got things like printers in their own house and everything. I mean, those things didn't happen in the late 70s and 80s, did it?
You didn't. Well, no. I mean, remember, I remember, you know, being involved in producing the newsletter for the ALF supporters group.
Yeah.
And right at the beginning, you know, before I was involved in that, the people who ran it, they had like a Roneo machine, a Gestetner, where they had to type everything out onto special paper and run it, you know, turn a handle on this thing and run out the copies. And then, you know, we progressed a little bit technologically and we had a great big, we hired the great big photocopier in the middle of our office and we'd kind of make up it was Vivian Smith that did it, who kind of, you know, shared the office with me because I was doing the press office. She was doing the supporters group newsletter. And she'd kind of paste everything onto the page. You know, there was stuff called letter set that you used to kind
That's
of,
it, yeah.
you rubbed in it.
People
it
won't kind believe of went, that now, would
no,
they?
No, you rubbed
you
it, it went
to
on the page.
Headline on a leaflet, right? You had to draw a line in pencil. Then you had this letter set, which was just all these, you know,
and you had to rub it stuck to the paper.
And then you have to kind of rub each letter and line it all up and everything. It took absolutely ages. Yeah, now that you can just go up to a computer and go, bit of a bum.
Oh, I know. It's a completely different world. And then even with photographs,
that does explain why the local groups didn't make their own stuff.
It was kind of more difficult for local groups to make their own stuff. But, I mean, the Vegan Society could have got stuff printed and kind of provided it to local groups. It wouldn't have been like the type of stuff we see today. And you know, indeed, the copies of the Vegan Society magazine back in those days were nowhere like what they are now with all the photographs and glossy stuff and that. It would have been of its time. But you see, back in those days, people were more used to that kind of stuff, more used to receiving that sort of literature because kind of that, to a large extent, that's all there was. So it would have been more difficult, of course. But I you know, what I'm saying is had it started then, you know, had we had, you know, vegan outreach back in the day there, even in a more rudimentary form than it is now, we would be further on today.
Yeah,
because
that rise would have
begun earlier,
But the lack of radicalism, because like the radical thing to have done would be for the local groups to insist on that and say, look, we're not going to hand out your stuff if you've got Go Vegetarian written on it. We didn't really, you know, there's kind of to and fro of information.
It was a little bit
top down, wasn't it?
Yeah, we didn't think like that though. The thing is, we all could have done that, but we didn't think of that.
No.
All we did was
on. We were radical, were we? That's what we're saying.
We weren't truly radical. We were radical in our philosophy in terms of, you know, we were anti-speciesists. We were opposed to human supremacists. We wanted the end of all oppression of other animals by humans. We all wanted that. We were vegan. But in terms of our actions, we weren't calling for that. We weren't campaigning for that. We were still campaigning for the same things that had been campaigned
for.
It's
to do with practicalities almost, because if you think back to the leaflets that we were giving out in those days, the chances are that we probably wouldn't have agreed with quite a lot of what they said, right? Because it didn't have an abolitionist vegan message.
Well, it depends. I think we certainly wouldn't have agreed with leaflets from Compassion and Well Farming when that began, because that wasn't abolitionist. And they're saying, oh, it's all right to kill animals for food as long as they're like so-called
Animal
Aid,
Viva, they were the same.
Other groups in the beginning were only campaigning for like vegetarian. It's only in more recent years that they've kind of switched to campaigning for veganism. That's very, very true. But you see, it's kind of easy to look back and analyze the past and think, oh, this is where we went wrong. You know, that it's very easy to kind of look at things like that in retrospect.
It's a good job if we've got a show out of it, Ronnie.
Yeah. But you see, I think it's also important to talk about today, to kind of bring it up to date with what's happened. Because, of course, that kind of went on through the years with people campaigning like that, people campaigning on single issues, people not campaigning for veganism. You know, that went on a long time and took various forms. You know, some of those forms were militant, some of those forms weren't militant. You know, we had the ALF. In the main campaigns, the ALF were against animal experiments against the fur trade, and there was considerable success with those campaigns. But there was a very real sense in which those campaigns weren't radical. They were militant, but not radical. You see, they were radical within the single issues, if you see what I mean. We weren't total abolition of fur trade, total abolition of animal experiments. Radical within the single issue, but they weren't radical within the kind of bigger picture of the oppression of other animals.
Yeah.
Well, and then, you know, we've...
I've been monitoring the chat, Ronnie, and so there's a couple of things that have come up. Let's try and address some of those before we run out of time. So Colleen here is saying, so is it the degree of deviation from the status quo that compromises a radical philosophy? Is that what you're saying?
I think it's probably more than that, because you can deviate from status quo in kind of two ways, can't you? And I think word radical does kind of mean a left wing position, really, that you want change in that kind of fundamental way to change society. I would say for the better. To me, that's what radical means. But it is a deviation from the status quo. I mean, we want a world that's kind of absolutely and totally different to the one we've got
now. It's interesting, though, isn't it? Even the thesaurus says that radical equates to left wing and conservative equates to moderation, which is quite
yeah. And that's that. You know, that would be my take on it. But I mean, bringing things up to the present day, we've kind of constantly had these kind of militant campaigns that weren't truly radical. We see the same today. We see the same happen today all over the place. You know, people, and once again, we see kind of a rise of militancy. You know, like the ALF, for various reasons, you know, the ALF went into decline, you know, perhaps more here in the UK than elsewhere, because of, you know, surveillance and, you know, the sentencing and special police squads and all that, you know, all these things kind of drove the kind of selfish attitude of people, encouraged by Margaret Thatcher and kind of successive governments. There was all that, you know, all the rise of neoliberalism and all of that, you know, contributed to the, you know, the kind of the decline in ALF type actions. We've had kind of, you know, there's to a certain extent like a little bit of a rise in militancy now.
It's kind of returned, hasn't it? But I mean, the social psychology of that is interesting, Ronnie, because in some senses, we could be kind of suggesting that, you know, the militancy is tied to the kind of personality that kind of needs victories and results and stuff, whereas the radical thing is to continue plugging at the fundamentals. Even if it's not as exciting or as...
Yes, I think there is an element of that. I mean, you can be militant in support of a radical aim. I mean, you can obviously be ridiculed in support
of... Yeah, well, we thought that would come up. In fact, there's a question or a point here by Vegan Stallion. We are radical and militant. And so, you know, we kind of was wondering about whether this kind of thing that we'd done is almost like put them as opposites. And of course that's not necessarily, so we call it radical versus militant, but you can have radical and militant, can't you?
You can have radical and militant together, in terms of, well, you can have it in two ways. You can have it within the limited confines of a single issue. In other words, that you're kind of, you're radical within that single issue. In other words, you're somebody that wants the total abolition of animal experiments, and you'll be militant in terms of campaigning for that. But in terms of the you know, a more fundamental level of opposition to all oppression of other animals, then what you'd have to have is some kind of, you know, militant promotion of veganism, where people campaigned for veganism, but where people campaigned with a vegan message, with a go vegan message, in a militant way. And the closest anyone's kind of come to that really is Animal Rebellion. But you see, they're still kind of going on about plant-based rather than vegan. So in that sense, that's kind of also a single issue campaign, because it's saying, you know, like what we want is animal.
Yeah,
you
but
know.
There's a circularity to this now, though, right?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
We've said that they don't have enough vegans. We're still in the same position, that we don't have enough vegans in society to drive the radicalism that we need.
Well, we don't have enough vegan society to drive the radicalism or the militancy that maybe we need. I mean, fundamentally, we have to educate far more people to become vegan. And that educational process, to a very large extent, is not militant. It's not militant. It's quiet. It's peaceful. It's changing people's mindsets, because that leads to really fundamental change. It leads to fundamental change in two ways. First of all, it changes the way those people behave fundamentally. So it changes the way they behave as consumers. It'll change their lifestyle. And that kind of all together and all added up together, you know, does have a considerable impact on the world. But also it changes the way those people think and behave politically. In other words, when it comes to, you know, people actually wanting to become politicians, the more vegans we have, the more vegans will want to become politicians, right? And become politicians with the kind of anti-speciesist agenda that they want to, you know, put into action. And then you have more vegans to vote for those politicians, you see. So it's not just about, you know, people that kind of promote single issues as opposed to vegan education, you know, promote kind of militant action in support of single issues, as opposed to, you know, peaceful education in support of veganism. They tend to look at vegan education as only in terms of changing how people behave as consumers. But it's more than that. If it changes how people think and behave politically, then you really are on the road to system change, because you can then eventually vote in a totally different administration, truly radical administration, that will kind of, you know, that would end all these single issue problems, that would end all animal experiments, would completely get rid of the fur trade, you know.
Yeah, but we've also got another problem now, because we've had a growth now in veganism, but it's not remained radical.
Yeah, and that's why vegan education, there's two forms of education in terms of veganism, and there's kind of two forms of education that I do personally in terms of veganism. One's educating the public to go vegan. Right, that's the first thing, and that can be done in lots of different ways. I mean, you know, often the introduction is can be through food, through food samples. You know, people come up, try vegan food, but then you are trying to educate people about the ethical reasons for veganism, because you want those people to, you don't want them just to be plant eaters, you want them to be truly vegan, of course. So there's education directed at the public, but there's also education directed at people who consider themselves vegan, because, you know, people talk about a vegan journey as if it's like some kind of journey towards veganism. But I tend to think of a vegan journey as a journey within veganism. In other words, somebody says, right, I'm going to be vegan. I'm opposed to all oppression of other animals by humans. I'm going to be vegan. I'm going to change my life in accordance with that, you know. But those people would still have a lot to learn in terms of, you know, what form does all this oppression take? And how can I oppose it in all its, you know, in all its appearances?
In all its glory.
Because you see, somebody may become vegan first of all because, you know, they don't like it that, you know, that animals are pressed for food, but then within that, you know, once that happens, they can learn about all the other areas that animals are oppressed in. I mean, I know people who describe themselves as vegan that will put posts on Facebook saying, I'm for my birthday, I'm fundraising for the British Heart Foundation. You know, an organization that funds experiments on animals. And I have to put a polite and kind post saying, oh, were you aware that this organization, I'm sure you weren't aware, but you know, this is the case, that this organization funds experiments on animals.
Because and what response do you get? Is it mixed?
Usually this response is sympathetic. Oh, I didn't know. I feel really bad that I've done this, you know. And I say, well, don't feel bad. You didn't know, but it's something to kind of, you know, bear in mind in the future, because they genuinely don't know, because there's so much emphasis now on the food. You see, in the old days, it's the other way around. Because we were campaigning against animal experiments.
Tying that point to a point that you made before then, and before we get back to a couple more points that's in the chat, is the rise of the new kind of militancy that we see in anti-vivisection now, you know, to do with the fact that veganism almost like forgot vivisection? And the reason for that is it de-radicalized, because the beginning of veganism, I mean, I would describe it as a revolutionary idea, and beyond what we've talked about. It's not just our relations with other animals. It's talking about things like the evolution of human morality, but also he's talking about peace across the board. And so,
yes,
you know, maybe the fact that veganism has kind of been de-radicalized by modern vegans has led to the militancy of the anti-vivisection people, because they're saying that there's no anti-vivisection within veganism, which is what you were kind of saying.
And that's the case because there's been so much emphasis on the food, and that people are led to believe that veganism equals plant-based, and it doesn't. You know, plant-based is just about the food someone consumes.
So as a movement, we're still kind of on this militant kind of radical register. We're still kind of letting everything, we're still kind of not getting it right.
And really the answer to that is to kind of do those two forms of education. You know, educate people within the vegan community that, you know, veganism isn't just about your diet. It's about, you know, opposite. It's about opposing all oppression and exploitation. That's veganism. And that oppression, exploitation of other animals for food is a huge area, a massive, massive area, probably the biggest. But there's lots of other areas as well, including other
massive
areas.
That's almost like the focus within the focus, I would say.
Kind of thing.
But it's not the scope. I mean, that's what we're saying.
No,
really.
The scope is like kind of, even if we just look at, you know, other animals, the scope is huge, because another huge area is adverse human impact on the environment. There's billions of animals, you know, dying as we speak, because of the climate crisis, which is, you know, caused by humans. It's a horrendous way in which humans have oppressed other animals, and with the huge toll of death and suffering. And so many vegans like kind of happily fly halfway around the world, you know, without considering the contribution that makes to the climate crisis, just for instance, to just give one example, you know, because their focus is just on the food. Oh, they care about, does this contain animal products or not, right? End of story. But sorry, no, it's a lot more than that. It's massively more than that. And so we have to educate vegans about what veganism truly means, or people that think of themselves as vegan, describe themselves as vegan, don't understand.
The vegan society did that, Ronnie, in a way. But time is moving on. So there's a couple of points that Colleen has made which are related. So this is in response to John, but so I guess we're saying that all direct action is militant. But then she asks you a question, or us a question: is any direct action de facto a militant action?
I'd say yes. Yeah, I'd say animal rescue is militant, because what you're doing, you know, you're in a situation where there's going to be confrontation, isn't there? You know, it's confrontational with the you know, the person that owns the farm, or the, you know, the place that you're taking the animals from, in almost all cases, actually unlawful. So yes, that kind of is.
I have a sneaky feeling that I know what's behind this question, actually, and so in some senses, I think it might be to do with that large mink release of late. And so you've got a militant action, which is not kind of very thought out, perhaps, and that's where
yes,
not radical, perhaps. I think that's what's.
Well, it's sort of not truly radical in two ways. well, certainly if that's a group that's saying we want an end to mink farming, we want an end to total end to the fur trade, is that because there's this philosophy, there's the action and the philosophy that underlies it, that underpins it. See, and the philosophy that underpins that would be, you know, by that action, like we want an end to the fur trade, total end to the fur trade. Yeah, it's radical within the confide to that single issue. In other words, they're not saying, well, some furs all right and other furs not okay, like they want all of it gone, right? So that's radical within that small confines. But in the larger confines of talking about and you know, total animal liberation, then it's kind of not radical, because it's not a call for like all animals to be liberated. So that's dealing with the philosophy, and then you get onto discussion, well, the type of action and, you know, the pros and cons of that type of action.
Then we've got the more controversial and kind of tricky situation where you've got something that's liberatory towards one group of other animals but might be deleterious to others, and obviously we're talking the ecological and the knock-on effect of releasing, you know, kind of predators into and thousands of them as well.
Yeah. I mean, I say the fundamental way we get rid of the fur trade, the fundamental way we get rid of animal experimentation, the fundamental way we get rid of hunting is to educate more people to go vegan, right? Because that operates in two ways. If someone's a vegan, they're not going to hunt, you know, and they're not going to buy fur. You know, they're not going to, you know, they're going to try and avoid, you know, contributing towards animal experimentation, aren't they? They're going to do all those things. They're truly vegan. So there's that in terms of like the way people's lifestyle impact on other things. But also, you know,
but would people from Camp Beagle agree with you on that, Ronnie? They would say, "Well, hang on a second.
The thing is, it's like the only way. It's the only way to fundamentally end it. The only way that we're going to end." Unless we educate a very large number of people to go vegan, doesn't have to be majority, be a large minority, we're really not going to end all these things. Where's the legislation going to come from to end those things? It's going to come from Parliament, isn't it? Right. So that depends on the composition of Parliament. It depends on the nature and the views and the mindset.
If we get a large population of non-radical vegans, we're not getting that far.
Well, no, but this is why. This is why we have to have the education within veganism. There's an education to be done with, you know, within vegans, and there's an education to be done within the general public to get those people to be, but on both aspects, it's education. You see, really, in a sense, and we're coming to the end of this, and it's kind of like probably a subject for another one. There's a sense in which we've protested too much and we've educated far too little, that so much of our energy has gone into protest. That's really gone nowhere. That's gone nowhere. That's been banging our heads against the brick wall because we're not doing anything to change fundamental attitudes, to change fundamental attitudes of ordinary people and to change fundamental attitudes of the administrations that we elect, right? We're not doing that. And so forever, we're kind of, you know, raging against, you know, it's just raging against the wind or whatever you might want to say that and it's kind of not changing anything because we haven't stopped and thought about how do we really change the machine.
Hey, look at
you're
this.
Raging against the machine. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
here's a program in itself. I've heard vegans who believe in animal rights argue for culling carnivores. Now this is close to what's called negative utilitarianism, but usually that's talking not about culling them but about transforming them into herbivores. Which is another major problem.
Yeah. Well, somebody who believed in animal rights wouldn't want to cull carnivores. I mean, in terms of other ways of like, you know, like we had a discussion in the last thing about kind of neutering Spain and the fact that that's the lesser of two evils. And we're forced to make that choice because there isn't a third one because of other people. And that maybe comes close to this. But you see, I think that question of, you know, do we make carnivores in the herbivores, right? There's an argument to have about that, but we can have that after we've got a vegan, after we're in control. You know, we can kick that down the road because we can't, there's no point in discussing it now, because before we can even discuss that, before there's even any chance of that happening, if it is desirable, and it may well not be, we have to have a vegan controlled society. And so let's concentrate on that first.
Yeah, same with the crop deaths situation. To solve the crop death situation, we need a lot more vegans.
Yes,
it's as simple as that. You know,
it's simple as that. Although, of course, people that consume animal products are more responsible.
But again, and to underline your thing about, you know, reflexivity, education, discourse within the vegan community, what we really need is for as many radical vegans or what you might call ethical vegans as possible, because we do know that there's a large fall off. I mean, John Cross mentioned this on Sky's Sunday School yesterday, saying it doesn't really matter why people go vegan in his eyes, so long as they're kind of doing it. But he did agree with Sky that if they don't encounter the ethics, there could be a problem, and that's what the research suggests.
Yeah.
So, but if they're not radicalized within veganism, it's a problem.
Yeah. The thing is, it depends on the reason. You see the only reason veganism is about animal liberation. Veganism is a philosophy of animal liberation. So you kind of can't, if someone kind of goes vegan for their health, then they're not vegan. They're a plant eater for their health, plant based for their health. They only become vegan once they accept the philosophy of animal liberation. That's when they become vegan. But somebody who accepts the philosophy of animal liberation might not be totally aware of the whole area of the oppression of other animals. And so somebody can be a genuine animal liberationist without knowing certain things, if you see what I mean. They can say, I'm opposed to the oppression of other animals by humans. They might not be aware of all the different ways in which that takes place and how they can oppose that. And so that's where the education...
I think we all not know certain things. One of the things that we're not knowing at the moment is good timekeeping, because... So the bus has not turned up, so I suppose we just have to shut this down. So listen, people... Sky Show should be starting any second, if not already. And so do transfer over to that. And we're going to say goodbye. And we're going to say thanks for tuning in. And we'll see you next week. Yeah.
Yeah. And and what I'd say to all the vegans there is get out there and do your best to educate others to go vegan.
And radical vegan.
And radical vegan, yes. I have to say that every show, because it like really is important. Yeah, proper vegan, you know.
Yeah. Okay, people, don't forget the Sky Show.
Yep. Cheers.